We kick off hour number three of the program, SEC Media Day's edition of Three and Out. Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, Billy Williford. This segment brought to you by the official credit union of Three and Out. It is the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. You can get all the details on all their services at tvacreditunion.com, or you can walk into one of over 20 branches right here in East Tennessee. Tell them you heard about them right here on Three and Out and Fan Run Radio. Did you see Dan Mullen get punked by Steve Spurrier? First of all, Dan Mullen is he's becoming one of the flagship or charter members of my hate list. Like, who talks about making a hole in one on a par three and, like, you know, real big boy golf? We're not talking about the Fan Run putt-putt tournament here. And mentions it, that it's 173 yards and that he used a 7-iron.
Shea Patterson?
Don't do it.
Got a hole-in-one. Don't forget. I hit that hole-in-one.
173 yards.
I get being excited about a hole-in-one. I get it.
But real golf people don't talk like that. They're like, yeah, it was about 170 over the water. It was a great shot. You know, pulled
yeah,
out my
I'd probably
I was
say
in
like,
between clubs.
Yeah, I had a hole-in-one at number three on this course. It was awesome. I was really excited. But, yeah, it's like he's trying to say I hit my 7-iron
170.
It's like,
because that's – I mean, that's kind of a thing. If you hit your 7-iron, you know, 175, 180, like that's
pretty
big,
good.
That's big boy golfing.
Probably it's probably downhill. Got a roll.
The wind.
Kicked off a hill. Hit a tree.
It bounced up on the green.
Well, apparently he went in bragging to Steve Spurrier, and Spurrier just said, I've had six of them.
Something tells me Steve Spurrier hates him some Dan Mullen. Steve Spurrier's just like, I don't know. I watched Steve Spurrier on SEC Network yesterday. They had him on, like, all the shows throughout the day. He looked miserable to be there. They kept being like, oh, man, we miss you when you would say all those things at Media Day and really rile people up. And he's like, I never took really any shots. I didn't mean to. It's like he now feels bad for all the things he said about, like, Tennessee
really?
And Georgia. Like, can't spell citrus without UT. And
yeah.
He was like, yeah, I used to say all those things for the Gators, for our fans. But it'd always get back to Knoxville or Athens. And
yeah.
I was never really trying to, you know, upset anybody. I was just talking ball. And now you can tell he just kind of feels like, I was kind of a jerk. And I bet Dan Mullen is just so like, hey, Steve, guess what I did today?
Hey, Steve,
watch this video of Frank.
Dad, yeah. watch.
Dad, I got a home run. I went pooping by myself, Dad. Yeah, I do that every day. Get out of here. Yeah, I've got six hole-in-ones. Thank you, Dan. I'm very busy. I have a phone call. I'm very busy. Jerry, call me right now.
Yeah.
Jerry, please.
Hey.
Jerry's his wife, by the way.
Jerry, I got a meeting with Dan at 10.
I need you to call
it 10:14.
10:02.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With an emergency. Make sure it's an emergency.
Jeez Louise, man.
Rough.
I bet it is hectic. I was watching SEC Network a couple weeks ago. Like, Dan Mullen gets to the office at like 4 every day and goes on like a... First of all, he doesn't look like a guy who runs... like 5 miles every day. I'm not saying he doesn't, but it felt like maybe he just did this because SEC Network came to town. But he ran and he had like...
He runs really slow, I bet, doesn't he? Like super slow. You know, there's the people that are like, yeah, I run 15 miles a day, and they're like running slower than
he's,
I walk.
Yeah, oh, he's not a... it was not a fast jog. But he also had like all the gear on, like the leggings and the undershirt and like
did.
The nice, you know, brand new running shoes, which I get that you'd have
nipple
good
pads.
Probably. Yeah,
don't want to be.
I think I want to say he maybe had a headband on.
Oh, goodness.
Or like a.
So he went full Andy Bernard in his.
Yeah,
workout.
Yeah. And I'm just like, of course Dan Mullen is going to run. I mean,
4 in the morning. I'm sorry.
And he's jogging around Gainesville, like around the campus.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, you wouldn't just jog like. I mean, no, like, I'm just saying, like, if you're Dan Mullen. Wouldn't you just jog like it at the facility, like just go onto the field and run laps or something around? But Dan, of course, is like out on the town running around. I mean, I guess he really did the running, but for this at least. I'm not saying he runs every day. It was just like a very weird, like, oh yeah, I run every day. I'll see you there at 4. Like, he seems like the kind of guy who would, he would like never run, but then make sure he's going to just like gut out 5 miles when SEC Network comes to town.
I mean, I know a business owner that like got up, you know, like started working at 5 every day for years because he just worked his ass off and built this empire.
Sure.
And still gets up at 5. And now he gets all his work done between like 5 and 9 and plays golf all day.
Yeah.
Like,
it'd be great.
Like, that makes sense. Like, 4? I feel like 5, 5:36, like, that's like getting up early and like having, you know, yeah, I go to bed with the sun, I get up, and I'm really efficient. And like, 4 seems like I just want to brag to SEC Network.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no.
4?
Well, it's like when they went to Starkville and he like was wakeboarding and wake surfing, and he was like, oh yeah, I love to wake surf. And he actually wake surfed, like he knew how to do it. So, I don't know, maybe he really is just...
Maybe all these guys are just on the coke. I don't know. Maybe that's how you can go to sleep at 12 and Jimbo, wake up at 4.
And just be ready
every
to go.
Day. I mean, running and wakeboarding.
I'm just saying, Coach O, it's more than Red Bull, okay? I'll leave it at that. I mean, it seems like Jimbo wearing sunglasses inside. I mean, got to have the energy. I mean, did you see the J.P. Morgan boat that they found in the...
No.
Did you hear about this?
No.
This is incredible. So, a J.P. Morgan cargo ship was seized at a harbor in New York, and they were opening the containers. They found 20 tons of cocaine.
20 tons?
Yeah.
You know how much a ton is?
Yeah, it's 2,000 pounds, so it's 40,000 pounds. 40,000 pounds of... like a box of Domino powdered sugar, like that's a pound, right? I'm trying to think of isn't it a pound like was it not, it's not
like the sweet 16 donuts? Is that what you're talking
no,
about?
No, just the sugar itself. Like if you go to the store, it's in like the Domino box, but it's not granulated sugar. It's confectionery sugar, something like that.
I'm researching this for you.
Is that a pound? I'm trying to think of like how
no,
much.
No, that's 4 pounds.
Well, a there's Domino, different sizes.
No, well, this is the. Isn't this what you're talking about?
No, I was talking about the box. So that's 4 pounds?
That's four pounds.
Cane, though, so it's going to be heavier.
Right, that's pretty heavy. Like,
I know, but I'm saying cane sugar is like hard crystals. I mean, cocaine is obviously a powder, so if you put the same amount of powder in there, it's not going to weigh as much.
All right.
I mean, that's a lot. But so like that's the conversation. Like, was J.P. Morgan smuggling drugs into the country to sell on the drug market? And that's how the... United States banks are funding themselves, or as my buddy said, no, that's probably just for their employees. Like, that's just their like Christmas bonus coming in early. Like, hey, good job. We're making a lot of money. Good job on the interest rate math. I mean, it's like Wolf of Wall Street, right? McConaughey's like, you want a bump? Is that what college football is? Is it just like a cocaine factory? I don't know how these guys do it. I mean, have you seen Lincoln Riley's office at Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Have you seen this building?
Right?
Yeah, it's an apartment. It's like 4 rooms.
Yeah.
He's got a full kitchen, obviously his office, a conference room, and a bedroom in his office.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, you know, obviously in the office all the time. I mean, I remember when Lane Kiffin was hired, that was a big deal. He like slept here for like the first 2 weeks. He just slept on a couch in the office. I mean, these guys don't sleep. You'd think they probably...
Well, Bob Stoops was at the retirement, I guess, ceremony for Snyder, mm-hmm. Bill Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, one evening, me and the other coach was in there about 11:45 at night, and Bill Snyder walks in and was like, all right, boys, call it a night. Go home early. And it was like 11:45 at night.
Call it a night.
Go home early.
Tell you what, why don't you guys take the morning off? I'll see you at 9 a.m.
I mean, those are coordinators, you know? He was like, Bill stayed.
Dude, that is
at some point, there's
how long you work
diminishing rate of returns
is the
here.
Measuring contest for coaches.
Well, for a lot of weird people.
It's the size doesn't matter for college coaches. It's the, no, I get up at 4 and I work till 1. Like, it's... I mean, we all say Steve Spurrier was... pretty good. Like, I don't know where you have him on your all-time list.
No, I mean, the famous story with Bob Stoops is that the week of the Tennessee game, he and Bob Stoops were at the beach boogie boarding, and Spurrier looks over and says, you think those Tennessee coaches are out having fun today? No. they were probably in the office crying over how the hell they're going to stop Dan Werfel. Like, it's
football. Just
work smarter, not harder.
It's
like,
not
that's,
that hard.
That's when a Pat Summitt's like, you definite know? Dozens. It's like smarter, not harder. Pat Summitt was one of the greatest coaches in basketball history. She was not in the office at 7 a.m. every morning, I assure you. I mean, like, if you know what you're doing and you're good at it, there's no need to, like, pretend to do other things.
Right.
To pretend, I mean, to pretend to work really, really hard. It's like,
there's working all day, which is what I do think working normal long hours is necessary to be a big-time college football coach. I do not think...
Certainly at times.
I do not think working into the night and waking up when it's still dark outside is necessary.
I mean, at some point, there's only so much you can do. Now, recruiting is different, right? I mean, like, making the phone calls, going on the visits, like, that's time. That's travel. That's everything. I totally understand that. But, like, if you're watching the same game film for, like, the 20th time, you're probably paralysis by analysis at that point. Like, you've probably overthought, rethought, and messed up at some point. Like, you've probably found the solution, and then now you've created problems that don't exist because you're like, oh, but his foot was twisted this way on this play, so that might be a tell. No, you're just looking at it too.
There's only so much your brain can handle in real time, too. Like, in the next game when you're trying to, like, you can have all that data, but if you can't access it fast enough to make the call, the right call, it doesn't matter.
You can have a great plan going into a football game, and then things change, and all that you planned, like, is worthless.
That's why that natural intuition talent from from a play caller, I think, is more important.
Yeah, feel of the game type stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It was only $1.3 billion worth of cocaine in the J.P. Morgan ship, by the way.
$1.3 billion.
Billion.
Well, that's before you know, if you cut it, like, triples the value. At least that's what happened in Bad Boys.
Yeah.
That's what the French guy did.
Mm-hmm.
He took his cocaine and... Well, actually, that was Johnny Tapia in the second one. The Frenchman. Where's my cocaine? But they cut it in the lab. But it was too moist, so they couldn't get it done in time. And that's why Will Smith and Martin Lawrence caught the bad guy. They blew his plane up. Spoiler.
Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. Pretty good pull by Billy on the bumper there. As we talk Tennessee and their beer permit.
What is ABC?
Well, the ABC store, or you're getting your stuff in an order.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways you could do it.
I got you.
Yeah.
Isn't that what it's called? Like your ABC license? Okay, yeah. I don't have one, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Nice job, Billy. Do you mean to do that?
I did. So, I'd try to do this throughout the show. Thanks for noticing, Nate.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm there with it, you know, mentally. Sometimes not. Sometimes I'm checked out.
But, Tennessee, go for it. Aramark have been granted the beer permit by the Knoxville Beer Board to serve alcohol inside Neyland Stadium and Tom Smalling Arena. They did it. But not a done deal just yet. So, I don't know. Did you read any of the the tweets and stuff yesterday that were coming out of the meeting?
The only thing I heard was that they had like a 100-page plan with like all the different stuff and answered all the questions, had an answer for all the good questions. But I don't know who that was.
Like, it's really weird to me that, I mean, obviously the same questions are going to be asked of Tennessee that are asked of any place that serves alcohol, right? So there were a lot of questions and concerns being brought up. Blake Stevens works for 6 News and WATE, and he was tweeting out some of the conversation. Like, Councilwoman Gwen McKenzie had concerns about like how much it could cost UT and added security, and that it could lead to more issues with underage drinking, abuse disorders, sexual assaults, etc. Like, I'm not saying that those aren't concerns, but it's almost as if she was trying to say that these are going to be, I don't know, like only possible now because Tennessee would sell beer. It's like the people are already drinking before and after the game. There are countless bars available on the strip to go pre and post game. There are alcohol you know, vendors and things around town. Like, I don't know how having it in the stadium makes any of those, like, better or worse. I mean, she said, like, she was worried about people drinking two beers in the third quarter and then being impaired as they drive home in the fourth. And my whole thing is, like, people are sneaking in airplane bottles of Jack Daniels. Like, mm-hmm. they're not going to sell in the fourth quarter, I would imagine. I mean, I don't understand, like, why all these questions. Like, I mean, I get it. They're the questions, but they already exist. It's not like we're going to have alcohol in the city for the first time ever, and this is the only place you can get it. It's already there. This is just really making it a little bit easier to get a beer.
Yeah.
You know, once the game starts. But let's not act like every airplane bottle that is attempted to be snuck into Neyland gets captured. So I thought it was kind of weird. I understand that, you know, you got to bring these things up, but it was a little bit over the top for me. They were asking, you know, how are employees going to be trained to identify an intoxicated person, yada, yada, yada. It's like, well, probably the same way everybody who serves alcohol is trained to not serve an intoxicated person and check an ID. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like very, very basic type stuff. But anyway, long story short, they granted the permit to Aramark. That's UT's food beverage vendor. So Blake Stevens says this paves the way for alcohol sales at Neyland Stadium, Thompson Bowling Arena, and Regal Soccer Stadium. Hmm. No word yet on Lindsey Nelson and or Sherry Lee.
Okay. All right.
But it's not a done deal. And I was listening to the drive yesterday or the day before, and Bear was talking about this. So Tennessee is a dry campus, and that is a state mandate for the UT system. So UT Martin, UT Chattanooga. Is Memphis in that? They're not in that web. But anyway, like it's mandated that dry campuses. When there's an event in Thompson Bowling Arena, like a concert, the city actually rents the arena and the parking facilities from the university. So the people who manage the arena for the university obviously work in conjunction with the city to host the event, to get the floor up, to help them, you know, set up their stage and set up the chairs and all that. But technically, on a night where there's a concert, that is a city of Knoxville event. They have rented the building. They can kind of do whatever they want. It's the same thing, you know, at the stadium. If you have a skybox, you are essentially renting the entire box. Like, that is yours. So you can bring in alcohol to your private space, whereas if I'm going to my seat, I cannot go and bring in alcohol to my seat. So now the issue becomes, will the powers that be in Nashville allow Tennessee to sell during athletic events? I don't know why you would get this far if that was not going to happen, but that is another holdup. And then what I think is probably the biggest holdup is the negotiations with beer distributors, beer companies. Like, how can Tennessee, you know, make the most money and get the sweetest deal? I mean, it's probably a bidding war at this point between, you know, your local distributors, and they're probably involving people from Coors, Anheuser-Busch, all that stuff, to see who wants to be the official beer of Neyland Stadium and how much they're going to charge, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, they serve beer and in alcohol all across the country in stadiums, and but we're going to have, you know, probably a delay on this because we can't just do what everybody else does.
A lot of the media ran it as, oh, got their permit. Done definitely going to be beer sales and Neyland Stadium.
I mean, the guy yesterday, I forget his name, the vice chancellor of student affairs, he basically said, like, just because we're going to be allowed to doesn't mean we're going to be able to. It's still a logistical thing. And I understand that part. Like, how many concession stands are going to serve beer? Where are they going to be? How much beer do we need to buy? What types of beer do we want to have? Do we want to have anything else? Do we want to have wine? Where are we going to get that? Where's that going to be? Like, there are those types of questions. But my guess is Tennessee's probably trying to, you know, again, get the best deal, the best rate, and make the most money, which they should. I mean, that's the whole point of this endeavor. But I hope it doesn't come at a cost of, yeah, we're not going to have beer until game four at Neyland Stadium this year. That'd be an issue. Like, if that is what was going to happen, then you should have just said from the jump that you're just not going to have it this year, but there's plans for 2020. Because people now are kind of expecting it. They're kind of thinking, yeah, this is going to be a done deal.
And
if you, that's what I'm saying. If you had just said, yeah, we're not going to do it this year, whether you could have or not, nobody would have known. But now that people know you've got the permit, you've known this was coming for a long time, and you still might not have it, that's going to feel very, very Tennessee to a lot of people and probably frustrate some folks. But for me, I'm like, well, they haven't had it before. If they don't have it for the first couple of games, whatever. That said, a noon kick against UAB, probably a couple cold beers would be pretty good. Or the 3:30 game against, yeah, you know, Georgia State. So we're closer.
Mm-hmm.
We're gaining on it.
One hurdle, yeah.
We're gaining on it. Got the permit. There were some people that said they might not even grant them the permit. But a 100-page report, you said? Here's our plan. 100-page plan. That's pretty good. It's not bad. I'd like to read that. I wonder if that'll be... Does that have to be made public since it went through the beer board?
I don't know.
I'd like to check that out. Maybe not all 100 pages. It seems like a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a lot of reading.
But we're moving forward, trying to get some brews. I wonder if Tennessee has any idea how much money they could end up making off this if they do it. Even if they half-assed it, they could probably make a ton of money.
You'd think so.
Also, I'm really wondering why Lindsey Nelson Stadium wasn't on that list.
That would make the – you know, as I would like a beer at a – at least the option to get a beer at a football game.
Baseball.
It's more important than baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you said that because I've been kind of like – I think I would – like if the powers that be, right, if the SEC or if the NCAA or the beer board, if they said, nope, you get one venue on campus that'll serve beer, I understand why you would take football, right?
Regal Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I understand why you would take football because there's 100,000 people. Your odds of selling a beer to more people are obviously higher. But if you're wanting to help like one program the most, beer at baseball would really help attendance and would raise a lot of money for UT baseball. That's what I think. I think baseball and a beer is like perfection. It's a slower pace. You don't have to – you're not standing up and cheering every couple of seconds. You're not mm-hmm. worried about knocking it over. They got cup holders in the seats. Like it just makes a little bit more sense. But obviously,
lines are going to be shorter, you know, to get one, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we'll see. At least it's a start. Like I said, they do appear to at least be seriously working towards it. I just hope we don't, you know, miss the forest for the trees here.
It's a good point. We'll come back. Hour number three rolls on here on 3 and Out Fan Run Radio. We roll on here, hour number three, SEC Media Days edition of 3 and Out. Do we have Auburn and Alabama today and South Carolina and Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Auburn and Alabama went
on the same day, huh? I guess they did that so the media can...
Yeah. They only went three teams to start, I guess. Usually isn't it usually three at the end? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I guess it's...
No, wait. Why did I say three? Four. Yesterday was... It doesn't matter. There's four left today. Is today the last day? Yeah. 5-4, right?
Oh, okay.
Or was it 4-6?
It
doesn't matter. 4-6-4?
I just don't know. Not sure.
5-5-4. Alabama, Auburn, South Carolina, Vandy.
I thought it was 4 days. It's only three? Is there not... There's no one going tomorrow?
No, yesterday was a ton of people, right? There was
A&M, Tennessee, Georgia.
I'm missing a whole day. I don't know.
It was Florida, LSU, Missouri, Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, A&M, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi State, South Carolina, and tomorrow is Kentucky.
So
and
it's
Vandy.
No one around.
So 3-4-4-3.
So who's today, Billy? Who's today?
Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and South Carolina.
So Auburn will be tomorrow then?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have Alabama.
That
today
makes sense. Yeah.
With Auburn Kentucky tomorrow. And Vandy.
So there's only three tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Indeed.
Well, little bit of bad news on Haynes King. Got another crystal ball to A&M.
Dang it.
So he's got six crystal balls.
That's okay. We got Harrison Bailey. He's my guy.
100% to A&M.
That's my guy, Harrison Bailey.
I think
Haynes King said it all along.
I think Haynes King just blew up too much. I think they wanted to take him as like the
he got too big, too fast
other guy. Yeah. You know, like hey, Harrison Bailey, we're going to bring in a more of a runner to compliment you, and in case
then he
know,
was really good
to compete.
And everybody
with you
was like, yeah, we could use a guy like that.
Dang it! See what Kellen said yesterday? Say he's the best quarterback in the league.
All right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I okay. We'll see.
To from
Garantano.
Billy. Not yet.
Joe Burrow.
Still time.
Joe Burrow. When's Mississippi State go? I know you just said this, but when's Mississippi
State? Today.
Today. I am interested to see how good their quarterbacks are or quarterback is.
Well, they got that transfer from Penn State who apparently can just hum that tater.
I mean, that'll be a team I'll be watching early in the season.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of scouting out for that mid-season game on the 12th.
Yeah.
Of October. Game numbers. I mean, that's you want to talk about making or breaking a season. Like the Mississippi State game, the South Carolina game. Those was it? It might have, somebody said it the other day who called in. Like those two home games are that's probably what's going to end up making or breaking your season. Got to win those games at home.
I mean, I don't know if you have to. I think Mississippi State could be a lot better than maybe we are thinking. They did lose a lot, but I think their offense could be pretty nasty. What is Tennessee's like?
Oh, it'll be Bob Stoops' return to Neyland Stadium.
I know. I'm ruling out offensive line, so you can't say that.
Okay.
Although, I don't know if you guys saw this yesterday. Trey Smith wants to play, and Tennessee doctors are, quote, trying to figure out a plan.
Oh, gosh.
They don't have a plan. They're trying to figure out a plan to make that happen. Obviously, Wanya Morris is probably going to get a start of tackle. Brandon Kennedy is your center. My guess is Darnell Wright gets the other tackle. If Trey Smith were to come back, what would you do with him? Put him at one of the guard spots to help the tackles out? Or would you slide one of these tackles to guard and let Trey Smith play tackle?
Is it just me, or did he play better at a guard position?
Well, he played better at guard because when he played tackle, he hadn't been playing football for a long time until he got cleared.
That's fair.
And it was the new system, which made everybody look bad last year. So I don't know how to grade fairly. But, yeah, Trey Smith as a freshman when he was playing guard, and he played a little bit of tackle that year. Yeah, he was really, really good. I think you'd probably do it and protect one of your...
Yeah, protect Wanya.
Yeah, protect your left tackle, blindside type stuff.
Yeah, left guard, I think, is the most likely spot.
And then you'd feel really good about... Well, I'd feel pretty good about the offensive line, assuming Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright are the real deal. We'll see about Brandon Kennedy. Sounds like he's going to be 100% healthy, though, and we'll see. See, got Cooper Mays coming in next year. That'll be... And I think he still has 2 years to play, Kennedy does, correct? Because last year he took a medical redshirt, so he's got 2 years of eligibility remaining. Right. That'd be nice. What Tennessee's Achilles heel, though?
And we can't pick
pick offensive line.
You have to say defensive line, right? Or is it the running game? Is it the running backs?
I don't look at running backs and say they're an Achilles heel. I think that still ties into the offensive line. I think if your offensive line is good, you're going to be fine running the football. I think you're going to be fine passing the football. I think
it's probably the unknown of the defensive line.
Yeah, like your front seven.
It's either the defensive line or it's the linebacker depth. Like you can't really, if Crouch is just kind of only good enough to be a situational guy, and Toa Toa is not quite there yet.
DPR they called him yesterday, and designated pass rusher.
Yes,
or some players like that. I don't know if that's what he is.
At my previous school, we had about 8 of those guys.
Yeah, we have large men hitting people hard.
We only have 5.
Yeah. Yeah. D-line, front seven, stopping the run.
I think the D-line could be fairly good. It could be a surprising
I think so, too. Like, I think they could be better than expected. I still wonder if they're not the weak link defensively. Right. Like, I worry about pass rush and stopping the run. It's a weird year in the SEC. I mean, I don't know what BYU's running attack is like. I know they have a really good quarterback. I feel good about Tennessee's secondary. Like, I feel really, really good about the secondary. But can you generate a pass rush? Because that was a big problem last year in a lot of games, especially the games you got killed was Felipe Franks having all day to throw, and when you would get pressure, he would just roll out and throw a touchdown.
I am worried about him not finding any other pass rushing option. That's a big deal.
Front seven is the question mark. But, man, there's a lot of – I mean, Jeremy Pruitt kept saying this yesterday. He's like, we have a lot of guys who are – they're good football players, and we have a lot of guys with potential to
potential
be
talent.
Good football players. I think this defensive line, the front seven, very, very high on potential, but I guess right now, outside of offensive line, They're my biggest question mark.
TK says, D-line without a doubt. That's why we need Solomon so bad.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean,
still nothing there, huh?
So we're just waiting.
Just hanging out.
That's why Jeremy Pruitt was so kind to the transfer portal people yesterday with his words. It worked for me.
Is that a question about the transfer portal?
Let them all transfer whenever they want, all the time, until I get my guys.
Until I get really good.
And then we're locking them down.
Not
going to lock it down. But no words on Solomon or Gibbs.
How you feel about the transfer portal directly correlates to
which side of it you're on. Are you sending or receiving through the portal?
The first variable is how long you've been at a program, and the second variable is how many wins you have averaged per season.
To ask the opposite question, is the defensive backs the position you feel, I guess,
like top to bottom, best about?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I might go safety as an Achilles heel. We saw West Virginia move guys around and pick on the secondary.
I know what you're doing right now, and I don't like it.
I mean, if Alante Taylor locks his guy down and Bryce Thompson locks his guy down on the outside, but you know a team has moved their best receiver into the slot, and you're bringing a bunch of heat because your front seven's not getting enough pass rush, and all of a sudden, you know, David Seals the fifth is hitching and going past whoever it is. I wasn't even going to say Nigel Warrior. It was like Theo Jackson.
You
or
said it without saying it. You punk.
No, I just mean.
Yeah.
You want to know why they're prioritizing all these versatile defensive backs in recruiting? It's because they need guys that can come up and tackle and also defend the slot receivers.
I mean, that's Nigel Warrior, though. He's a little bit smaller for a safety, and he's super, super fast. Like, I don't think speed and covering is his problem.
No.
I think
mentality and consistency.
I do worry about the other one, though. Just because I don't know who it's going to be yet. And, I mean, Theo Jackson, a lot of people are pretty high on him. He was injured last year. I believe it was a collarbone. But the coaches really liked him before he got hurt.
Who's the other guy that started? Who started against West Virginia? I'll look it up.
I know Trayvon Flowers.
Trayvon Flowers.
Yeah. Okay. That's
what I don't know.
Flowers.
Okay.
Jackson,
maybe was Jackson
was it Trayvon that broke his collarbone, or was it Flowers? Was it Jackson?
Might have been Trayvon.
Uh-oh.
But at safety, you've got a lot of options. I'm just not sure. Like, it's kind of like offensive line last year. They need to figure out who the best is and get them ready and roll with them. Because I do feel like there's enough talent there, but you got to be able to, you know, come with a pecking order pretty quickly, I would think.
It was Flowers that broke his collarbone. So Theo Jackson kind of got thrown in the mix, and I thought performed pretty well for – he was a true freshman.
Yeah, Flowers.
So they'll get Flowers back. They'll have Jackson. Obviously, you've got Jalen McCullough.
Flowers was the one that got roasted against West Virginia as a true freshman in the opener.
He didn't start playing football until his senior year in high school.
So, like, I mean, that's just an example of being outmanned at that point. But, so anyway.
Is there a battle for one of the safety spots?
I'm trying to remember who the starter was even for the spring game.
Wow. Don't know if I can help you there.
I think it was Jackson. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're still competing at that. Like, that's not written in stone. Unless I'm just completely missing somebody, which is possible. I mean, Jalen McCullough made plays as a true freshman in the spring game for the second string unit.
Right. Theo Jackson is a junior.
Right.
Flowers is now a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So they're both really, really young players.
Was he not able to redshirt last year or no?
Flowers?
Yeah.
No, he played a ton.
Did he come back after the... he said his stats on
played
UT
in
Sport,
seven games.
Yeah,
last
played in okay. seven. So oh, no. yeah, so he must have. I think he broke it in game one or game two, and then came back for the last few.
He started against West Virginia, so he had that. All right, he made two tackles against Florida. Played against Georgia.
Missed five games midway through the season due to injury, but returned as a reserve defensive back and on special teams against Missouri and Vanderbilt.
I think he never became a starter again at the end. So I'm sure he's battling with
Theo
Jackson, yes.
And probably a few more of these guys.
Yeah, I would think that's pretty wide open. I mean, you need, like, You know, you got to find a nickel. You got to find the other safety. But I think you have talent there. You need to figure out the pecking order, make a call on that, and then train them up so that they're ready to play kind of in that order in those roles. Because last year it was the problems of roulette at offensive line were a little bit there at safety and who handles the slot.
Well, the problem is in this defense, the safeties have to really play a lot of man-to-man, and if you've got guys that just can't do that, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, but aren't these safety positions interchangeable? Like, it's not free and strong. It's just left and right. So, like, theoretically, could they not cross-train? And if
– Sure, yeah.
Just switch before the snap?
If
I'm just saying, if Nigel Warrior is your best man safety – could you not just say, oh, the slot's on the right. Hey, Theo, switch with me.
Well, then
I'll play two, you play one, and I'll cover the slot.
The problem was the nickel guy, which won't be any of these guys, will normally take the first slot guy.
Right.
But then what teams have been doing is, like, you know, putting guys in short motion or
sure.
flexing and,
sure.
you know, trying to make you have to make that adjustment after. And that's where Tennessee really struggles. When you'd see Jeremy Pruitt yelling at some of these guys, hey, move up. You need to be tighter on that mm-hmm. guy. And it worked a couple times, Auburn game, for example. And then there were some others where teams took advantage, especially early. I mean, West Virginia just sticks out. But I think the secondary is definitely where you feel the best at. But figuring out how to defend that, I mean, that's what teams are doing the best on offense right now anyway.
Yeah.
So that's a question for
Andy
for
Sexton
any
tweets
team.
In and says the VolQuest guys are in unison that it will be Flowers and Warrior. So – even though Flowers did not win his starting job back after
okay.
the injury, he is, I guess he performed well in spring, and they expect him to have it going into fall camp and the season.
Well, that was like Pruitt's guy. I mean, that was one of his recruits.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, kind of handpicked.
We'll come back. Final segment of the program. We'll jump around next.